From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
I'm Robert Siegel, and it's time now for All Tech Considered. Columbia law professor Tim Wu writes that information technologies, the telephone, movies, radio, television, have all gone through a similar life cycle. Information technologies give rise to industries, and industries to empires. Empires like AT&T, the Hollywood studios, the broadcast networks. Tim Wu says this cycle ultimately destroys the innovative spirit that creates new information technologies, as well as the openness that typifies them when they are young. In his new book, The Master Switch, Tim Wu asks if the Internet is next. And he joins us now from our studio in New York. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
And first, what is the Master Switch?
Well, it's a metaphor. Fred Friendly, the CBS News president at one point, said, "What really matters in media is not the First Amendment or censorship, but the master switch." This idea that there's some control of information that the industries have beyond anything else.
Now, the first example that you write about in the book is the advent of the telephone, which was invented by a couple of guys in a laboratory in an age when Western Union, the telegraph company, dominated communications. First, I mean, how would you describe Western Union, the big guy's attitude toward this upstart technology?
Well, the first thing, they just thought it was a joke. They admitted that it might be used to extend the telegraph in certain areas. For example, you could get a call from the office, your telegraph is ready. That was their original attitude. They changed pretty quickly when they realized it might replace the telegraph, and then they just tried to destroy it.
When Western Union was the telegraph company, and it had cables, it had wires all over the country, it also was in league with the dominant source of news of the world and the nation, the Associated Press, you write.
Yeah, this was one of the most dangerous periods in American history, when you had a single information monopolist to control the only long-distance communications, allied with a news monopoly, the Associated Press. Between the two, their hobby, essentially, was throwing elections and spying on candidates they didn't like and giving the results to the opponents. I think it was a very dangerous period for American democracy, and it shows what happens when you have one monopolist over transport, linked to one monopolist over news, you have a very dangerous situation.
And the model of Alexander Graham Bell, that model of a very small operation, guys who are perhaps not ready for big business, that's been pretty much consistent throughout here, throughout your story.
That's true. There are attics and garages. And on the East Coast, there's attics, the West Coast garages, a couple inventors in a room changing the world and then trying to avoid being destroyed by somebody to get the invention out there.
A lot of what you're writing about in The Master Switch is monopoly and the interest that entrepreneurs have in becoming monopolists. Yeah. And the first person you write about in the book, Theodore Vail, the hero leader of AT&T, offers a defense of monopoly, or an argument in favor of monopoly, that's really quite strange. He's saying competition invites bad behavior.
Yeah, I think he believed competition was immoral, that it made people into lesser men, and that there was a nobility in monopoly, similar to the nobility in monarchy. Ultimate power brings ultimate responsibility. You then serve the people. And the American economy should be organized with responsible titans in charge of every industry who owe a sort of duty to the public.
Now, history repeats itself, as you describe it, with the movie industry and television and radio before that. Now we've come to today's game-changing technology, the Internet. How does all this apply to the Internet?
Well, we've had the same cycle. The last 10 or 20 years, we've been in an era of incredible utopianism, optimism, openness. Around this time is when people start to say, it's good, but the quality needs to be better. A few major monopolists begin to show up and say, we're going to organize everything. And you see this all right now, whether it's Google or Apple, kind of trying to put everything together into one package and deliver it in a more convenient way. I mean, if you've used any Apple product, it's incredibly convenient, and all the stuff is there, the best Hollywood content, so forth. So at stake partially is your convenience. But on the other hand, at stake is freedom. Obviously, there are people who you might want to trust to be curators of information for you, but that should always be a choice, not something decided by a master switch.
You write that Google, a champion of openness, and Apple, once revolutionary, but now in bed with AT&T, are the industrial and ideological leaders of today, that their future is America's future. What do you mean by that?
I think a lot of what defines America is how and what kind of information we get. And these are the two companies that have more control than almost any entity on Earth over what you see and hear on a daily basis. Whether we move to a world that is more controlled and more integrated, the Apple world, or whether we remain or progress further into a media environment which is more chaotic, open, the Google world, that will very much define what this country is like over the next several decades.
Use of the word chaotic here is telling, because the people you write about, the people who were the insurgents who brought new information technologies, chaos is what they want at the moment of their coming on the scene. But ultimately, they find order to be very attractive.
It's a typical life cycle. That's true. It is exactly true. The one-time revolutionaries always become the next generation of dictators. It's always happened, and that's why you need in technology another generation of revolutionaries to upend them. It's a never-ending cycle.
Should we reasonably expect industries to self-regulate, or is the prospect of the heads of Microsoft and Apple and Google all sitting down together and deciding what's right for the country, or do we really want to see that?
I see the virtue of the leaders of industrial powers as the first line of defense. In other words, I do think we should expect a sense of public duty for people who have so much power over information. You can sell it self-regulation. The Romans call it virtue. But I don't think that's the only thing. I strongly believe you need public and government oversight.
And what would be the model for government oversight?
It's a tough thing to do exactly right, because the government can easily become a tool of the monopolist. But the ideal is an independent FCC or Congress that pays attention and demands that these companies act in the public interest, that they be aware of their role as the keepers and switches of American information, that they have special duties that go beyond the ordinary company's duties. That can happen through hearings, the FCC, occasional penalties. And the ultimate oversight is called the Sherman Act. When a monopolist has gotten too stagnant, too abusive, and cannot be dislodged, it must be destroyed.
Tim Wu, thank you very much for talking with us.
It's been a great pleasure.
Professor Tim Wu's new book is called The Master Switch, The Rise and Fall of Information Empires. This is NPR.